From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Shelley Koffler with a KERA election special. A week from today, Texas voters will make a series of decisions that could determine what the state's government will look like for years to come. Early voting began yesterday for the May 27th runoff election. And here's something we know. A lot of Texans, especially conservatives, don't trust their elected officials anymore. Les Roysom of Greenville puts it this way.
I believe they're hiding, there's subterfuge, there's backdoor money, there's underhanded politics going on, cronyism. Anytime you leave a group of people with access to voter funds, your money and your honor is going to disappear.
This election year, that mistrust has translated into some long-serving incumbents and business-friendly Republicans losing re-election or running behind their Tea Party challengers. If Tea Party candidates take control of major statewide offices, like Lieutenant Governor and Attorney General, SMU political science professor Cal Gilson expects a big change in the way important policy issues are decided.
The Tea Party seems to be on the wane nationally, but that doesn't seem to be the case in Texas. So the big contest within the Republican Party is a Tea Party, small government, low taxes, maybe even get rid of the property tax. More business-friendly Republican interests want to see some additional spending on education, on access to health care, but particularly infrastructure, roads and water. The Tea Party will not permit that to happen.
So what does this mean for the future of the Republican Party? And how does this affect Democrats as they seek to regain influence in Texas? This half hour, we'll consider what's at stake in the May 27th runoff election as we talk with Gromer Jeffers of the Dallas Morning News and Bud Kennedy with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We'll get started by looking at the highest profile race on the Republican ticket. That's the battle for lieutenant governor between incumbent David Dewhurst and Senator Dan Patrick of Houston, who led Dewhurst by 13 points in the primary. Dewhurst's message is that he's the most conservative lieutenant governor in Texas history and has proved he can get the job done.
I like to solve problems. I'm a businessman. I know my being involved, didn't do it all alone, but my being involved in cutting taxes 54 times for almost $16 billion has helped us create the best business climate in Texas of any other state. It's created more jobs. Unless you've got a strong lieutenant governor who has ability, who has integrity and a vision, you're not going to get those bills passed. And if you have a lieutenant governor that's controversial, that the senators can't trust his word, then nothing's going to happen.
Dewhurst is obviously implying Patrick is too controversial to get results. Patrick, with his Tea Party backing, says he's the candidate with a real conservative agenda.
We need someone with passion and energy who's going to complete the conservative agenda that has not been completed. Look, our border is not secure. We need school choice. We have an education crisis in the state. We don't have our water because those needs have not been addressed that we need for 20 million more people. Look at the roads in Dallas-Fort Worth. There are cones everywhere. We can't rest on our laurels ever. In a state this big that's growing, we can never say, look at what I've done. I'm not interested in what we've done, and I'm proud of what we've accomplished. I'm looking at what needs to be done. And that's why I think people are looking for new leadership. They know there's a conservative agenda that has not been completed.
Okay, so with me to talk about this very important race is Gromer Jeffers of the Dallas Morning News and Bud Kennedy of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Good to be here.
Thank you, Shelley. Good to see you, Gromer.
Good to see you, Bud.
Let's start out by talking about the Tea Party influence here. Why have the Tea Party groups backed Patrick when every major newspaper in this state have endorsed Dewhurst? Gromer, what's the difference? What's happening?
That is part of the problem for Dewhurst. He is running in an arena where voters don't care what the newspaper says. They don't care what editorial boards across the state say. I mean, they're out. I mean, they're dismissive of newspapers, and in some cases, hostile toward newspapers. You know, the voters who are swayed by what, you know, newspaper editorial boards have to say, they'll show up in November in the general election, the regular Republicans, but not in the primary and runoff elections.
So, Bud, what's the difference between these two guys in terms of the way they would govern?
Well, you know, Dewhurst has been lieutenant governor now for 10, 11 years, you know, 12, has a record, has a long record of accomplishment. He was not an actual lawmaker before he got elected. He has been, he was land commissioner before he became lieutenant governor. So he has tried to keep a steady hand on the Senate and move legislation along. It's too steady for Dan Patrick's taste, and in particular, Dewhurst is criticized for his handling of the abortion filibuster and the night that Wendy Davis filibustered for so long, and then others ran out the clock. But he's criticized for not managing the clock well or managing the chamber well on that night, and it became something that hundreds of thousands of people watched worldwide who'd never before seen the Texas Senate. And they said, well, why don't they go ahead and do something? And the focus of that criticism was David Dewhurst.
And on the other, on the opposite side of that, Patrick is criticized for not being able to get along with people. Dewhurst has said he couldn't get the sonogram bill passed, that Dewhurst had to step in. Can he get along with people? Can he do the job? Does he have that personality?
He probably can't get along with people, but again, in this arena, that's probably a good thing to some of the Tea Party voters and movement conservatives that could dominate this process. But, you know, Dewhurst raises a good point. I mean, it's all about leadership. And there are regular Republicans who are afraid of what will happen in the Senate chamber if Patrick becomes lieutenant governor.
Let me bring up an issue. I mean, obviously, this has been a very nasty campaign. Let me bring up an issue that that sort of rose to public attention last week, and that is Patrick's psychiatric treatment over 20 years ago. Jerry Patterson, who came in fourth in the primary, is now supporting Dewhurst, and he released some court records that showed that Patrick in the 80s was very briefly hospitalized in a psychiatric facility, took some antidepressant medication, had chemical imbalance, attempted suicide. But Patrick's campaign has said he's recovered long ago and is not being treated for mental issues now. Very quickly, Bud, is this an issue in the campaign? Will voters care?
Well, you know, voters at this point will not care. You know, what this really says, if of course, Dewhurst has held back on making this much of an issue, it says, it speaks to his argument that Patrick is too emotional, too histrionic, too moody to govern the Senate well. That's what David Dewhurst could say, but he hasn't said that. The voters will look at this and say, well, it was 20 years ago. You know, the guy's been okay. You know, my gosh, he's held down a radio job since then. He seems okay.
Does it backfire on Dewhurst, Cromer?
Sort of. It could, because this should be a time where we have greater awareness for mental health issues. And the fact that Patrick actually sought help and got the problem solved ultimately could be a plus and not a negative.
Okay. Well, we want to move on now to another big statewide race, and we want to talk about a race that pits two North Texans against each other for the office of Attorney General. State Representative Dan Branch of Dallas says only he has the legal experience to do the job, and Branch claims Paxton doesn't deserve to be the state's top lawyer because Paxton has admittedly violated some financial reporting requirements.
His own police force in McKinney, his hometown, has announced their unendorsement. They've withdrawn their endorsement because of his admission of repeated violations of our securities and our ethics laws. And there's a lot of questions now looming about that and whether or not he's now subject to state criminal or federal civil disciplinary concerns. I think we need to have the most effective conservative and the most qualified lawyer. My record fits that bill.
Paxton, who has big Tea Party backing, just like Patrick, he finished ahead in the primary, and he says he's paid a $1,000 fine already and that Branch is just exaggerating.
Listen, there's no lawyer out there that's an expert on every area of law. Securities laws are very complicated. Even some of the experts have disagreements over what things mean because they're not always clear. For 12 years, I've had a conservative record, whether it's on fiscal issues or social issues. My opponent has not. Whether it's on the budget and voting for massive increases in spending, whether it's co-authoring a large tax increase, he's running significantly to the right of his own record.
So, Bud, how serious are these allegations against Senator Ken Paxton?
You know, I don't think that they've really been spelled out to the point that voters can understand them. Basically, what really involved was a financial advisor not telling you, look, I've got some skin in this deal. I'm going to make some money off this in the disclosing his involvement. But again, this was a long time ago. He says it was an oversight, that the securities laws are very complicated. You know, I think that this is not something Branch has made headway with. But for the candidate for attorney general to say the law is just too complicated, maybe something that Sam Houston makes headway with in the fall.
The Democrat. And Grimmer, let me just ask you, Representative Branch has wanted this job forever. Why is he running so far behind?
Well, look, the sound bites tell it all. Paxson is saying, look, I'm the only true constitutional conservative in the race, while Branch is trying to get voters to understand that Paxson broke the law. But after that, okay, how did he break the law? And then there's this complicated reason and complicated, story behind all of that, and they're just not getting it.
Quickly, can he be prosecuted? I mean, is there legal action or no?
I don't think that it will rise to that level, but I don't know. I mean, therein lies the problem. I mean, he's paid the fine. The average voter doesn't know, what he did wrong. And he's saying, look, I'm a constitutional conservative. He puts his arm around Ted Cruz, shows the picture, and that's it. That's all he needs to do.
Well, once again, we are talking about Tea Party influence in a big race in this state. These Tea Party-leaning groups have seemingly made a difference in who's taken the lead here. And I wanted to say, I spent an evening last week in Greenville, where one of the really big Tea Party groups, Grassroots America, it's run by Joanne Fleming. That group has teamed up with four other influential conservative groups. They are saying they are the Liberty Movement. And they believe that with this election, they can become the dominant voice in Texas politics, in Republican politics, and therefore in the state. So here's some of what I heard from Jim Graham, who heads Texas Right to Life. That's followed by Michael Quinn Sullivan of Empower Texas and Tea Party organizer Joanne Fleming.
These guys work for us. And if they don't want to pass pro-life bills, tax cuts, homeschooling bills, they need to go home once and for all.
Texas is a conservative state. There is no reason why we shouldn't have strict constitutional spending limits in place in Texas. And yet, the Speaker of the House and the Lieutenant Governor haven't even put it up for a vote.
We certainly want government and need government to do its constitutional responsibilities. But Texas government has grown outside of the boundaries of its core constitutional functions. So what we're looking for are legislators who are going to be willing to do what it takes to push and shove Texas government back inside a constitution-sized box.
So the influence of the Tea Party movement, this liberty-leaning movement, has already been felt in a lot of North Texas elections, as we know. Members of this group take credit for unseating incumbent Senator John Corona of Dallas and Representative Bennett Ratliff of Carrollton. Both of them are Republicans. But there are some other races where this philosophy seems to be having an effect, and I'm thinking about Senate District 10 in Tarrant County.
Right. Well, Shelley, in this room a couple of years ago on an election night, we said that Texas is a two-party state, the Republican Party and the Tea Party. And
I believe you made that statement.
I think now we may be down to a one-party state. I think the Tea Party candidates are mustering the most effective message, the best graphics, the best social media campaigns, and it seems like the establishment Republicans are just having trouble getting a punchy message out there that people can lock on to. Both of these Senate races will decide the future of the Texas Senate under the new, maybe a new lieutenant governor. You have Senator Duell from Grapevine, who's challenged
from
the Tea Party, right? And then you have Connie Burton from Colleyville, who's running for this traditionally powerful swing seat in Fort Worth and Arlington, Wendy Davis's old seat. And she has a lot of Tea Party organization. She's been working for a long time. And, Mark Shelton is the establishment candidate in that race, but it's a bad thing. She's the most awful thing about Mark Shelton. He's been in the legislature for a couple of terms. You don't want anybody like that, or at least that's her message, is that he's been down there. You don't want him.
Well, a couple other races, the State Board of Education race in Tarrant County, the incumbent Pat Hardy faces a very strong challenge from Eric Maroom, who's supported by the Tea Party. And Gromer, here in Dallas County, there is a ripple of that as well.
Right.
What makes the difference? I mean, do you think that these regular sort of business-oriented Republicans will be voting in numbers or not?
I don't think they will, and that's the problem. Where are the regular Republicans, Bud? I mean, you hear the Tea Party voice is loud and clear. You hear them. Now, regular Republicans do write checks, but you just don't see that mobilization. You don't see that activity out there. You don't see the where the folks are saying we need money for infrastructure, for water, for roads, all of that. No one's talking about that. You're talking about, you have people.
Cal Gilson brought that up. He said, what's going to happen? What will happen with those issues? Will we support water with our tax dollars? Will we, build the infrastructure, build new roads, or will we say, suck it up and live with what you have?
It's going to be like Congress, where spending bills, spending initiatives will be so difficult to get past the legislature that you won't be able to fund transportation projects or big water projects. It just won't happen.
The establishment Republicans have just set this term out. They decided not to run against Connie Burton, well, with Shelton, but there were other bigger names who wanted to run and in some of these other races, because they feel like that with the incumbent president in the sixth year of the term, there will be an automatic backlash against the Democrats and against any incumbent from either party, and they felt like that this is not the time to be out there as an establishment candidate. The Tea Party, by the way, in Texas is really a combination of the Ron Paul libertarians and the old religious right. They've teamed up together to say we're all the outsiders and we want to be the insiders.
Think how frustrating it will be for David Dewhurst and Dan Branch in November to look at the numbers and see a big, huge Republican turnout.
We can't say it's over, though. We have an election on Monday, so we'll see what happens. And I do want to turn to the Democrats, because we've been talking about Republicans here, right? And we do have some runoff races among Democrats. We're not hearing much about them, Gromer. David Alamiel, the Dallas dentist, is facing Keisha Rogers, a Lyndon LaRouche supporter in the U.S. Senate race. There's some others.
Exactly. And you have Kinky Friedman, running his race against little-known Jim Hogan. I think for Democrats, the Alamiel race is important, because if Keisha Rogers wins, I mean, I just drove here and I saw a sign, impeach Obama, vote Keisha Rogers, So if she wins, that's embarrassing. But also, Alamiel has pledged to spend whatever it takes to beat Cornyn. Now, he's not going to beat Cornyn. But every dollar he spends will help the Wendy Davis effort and help the statewide Democratic ticket. So that's why that's an important race.
And we have the Agriculture Commissioner race with Kinky Friedman, who got the endorsement on his pro-pot, pro-marijuana platform.
He likes weed, exactly. He sees that as a growth industry for Texas. But, the guy he's running against is basically running his bare-bones campaign. I mean, he goes to
He's a dairy farmer from Cleburne, Jim Hogan.
Goes to the library or wherever and gets on a computer and sends stuff out.
And he came in first in the primary.
And he came in first. Again. I mean, well, in that case, the Democrats didn't really get behind Kinky Friedman like he was a front runner. But a big name like that, you wonder what's going on.
Well, Bud, let me ask you this. If we have a major Tea Party victory and that sets the stage for what happens in Austin, does it help the Democrats somewhere down the road?
Well, I think what you've seen, there was this debate in Austin between Senator Patrick and Mayor Castro. I mean, they set this up. And I think the Democrats have been openly promoting Dan Patrick because they want Letitia Van Der Put up against him on the ticket on the fall. I think the Democrats have been, surreptitiously and even openly, in some cases, pushing these Tea Party Republicans. At the very least, they've stood out of the way and said, okay, if the Republicans are just going to keep running to the right, let them go and see if they go off that cliff and see if but the Democrats haven't figured out how to fill that gap.
The middle was still wide open,
The Democrats could have their campaign come out now and say, we're the ones who will bring ethics and openness back to government and do all the things the Tea Party wants, but the Democrats haven't figured out how to take that message.
Yeah. And I do think the middle is still wide open. Democrats are still, when you look at Texas, still way over to the left. The Republicans are going further right. I think it's the party that's able to capture that middle, whether it's right of center or left of center, will be able to do well.
So there may be an opportunity down the road that we're setting the stage for now.
Right.
I want to talk about one more race, because, as you know, after more than 30 years in Congress, 91-year-old Ralph Hall, he just had a birthday, faces a runoff challenge from former U.S. Attorney John Ratcliffe. And here's why Hall and Ratcliffe each think he's the better choice.
If they want to run against my birth certificate, I don't have any defense to that because it says 9-0 on it. And if they run against me, they'd come and see that I'm passing more legislation than I've passed in the last 5 years because I have better opportunity to. I'm on committees that have access to success there. I'm pretty consistent. I vote not to increase taxes. I took a vow on that when I took it, and I've kept that vow.
Well, it's certainly his prerogative to run, but from my perspective, I'm running because he's not being an effective leader for the people of this district. I think that he falls into a class of politicians that have gone to Washington and stayed too long and made a lot of promises that they haven't kept. For the last 5 years, I've seen the GOP leadership get outworked, outsmarted, outmaneuvered, and beaten by Obama and the Democrats, and I'm just tired of it.
And John Ratcliffe says, age is not an issue here, but Bud, is age the issue here?
Well, I think age may be the issue, and is John Ratcliffe coming too soon to try to throw Ralph Hall out of office? Ratcliffe, everybody has assumed he'd be the heir apparent, but yeah, now there's actually some pushback from some senior Republicans who say, you know, don't pick on Ralph Hall, and you've seen, you know, even people like David Barton rallying to Ralph Hall's side. And Ron Paul is 13 years younger than Ralph Hall, but says, you know, that Ralph Hall has done a good job and has done what Republicans want in Washington. The question is just whether Ratcliffe cut in line to try to jump ahead before his turn to have that seat.
Well, yeah. There certainly is a lot of sentimental support, if nothing else, for Ralph Hall. He was a Democrat, became a Republican. The Republican Party embraced him. And, you know, he's going to have a reservoir named after him pretty soon, so he must have done something right.
Yeah, he the issue, I think, is not as much age as it is he's been in Congress for such a long time. And the movement conservatives, with the anti-incumbency mood out there, you know, they see him as someone they can go after. But he's proven himself a worthy opponent. Folks are rallying around him. You're right, Bud. Ratcliffe may have gone too early.
Well, the other Republicans in Heath and Rockwall, I see a lot of the people around Ratcliffe supporting Hall saying, you know, he's fine, but it's too soon.
Yeah.
But he certainly is establishing a name for himself. And as you mentioned, he has some Tea Party backing. He has some experience in government. Do you think he's sort of he's looking to the future? And if he doesn't win this time, he's at least becoming a known name.
And it's every 2 years. So if he does lose, he'll just gear up and run again for the next campaign. Hall has said this will be his last term. We'll see. I'm always cautious about that. I mean, you know, last term, okay.
And then Ratcliffe, if he wins, he could stay another 40 years. There have been, I think, 3 congressmen in this seat for the last century, something like that.
Okay.
That's stability or... Yeah.
Well, let's wind this up by your telling me what you think the biggest headline is going to be out of this election.
Movement conservatives win. Win key victories, the Texas Republican Party goes further to the right.
Bud, how about you?
I think Tea Party not dead in Texas. And then maybe a little subline, Democrats have Kinky against Sid Miller. I think that's the little subplot we'll be watching.
Well, I do think that will be a very entertaining race for all of us to cover. And I thank both of you for being here. Clearly, a lot of important races are going to be decided with these runoff elections. Gromer Jeffers of the Dallas Morning News, Bud Kennedy of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, thank you once again for joining us here at KERA. This discussion is going to be posted at keranews.org, and you will also find links to voter guides there and stories about the candidates and issues. I'm Shelley Koffler with this KERA Election Special.